Hello, this is Polling Matters. I'm Leo Barassi, and I'm delighted to be joined, as ever, by Kieran Pedley.
Hello.
And this week by Matt Carter.
Hi.
Matt was General Secretary of the Labour Party during the successful 2005 election campaign. Since then, he's set up and run the European Office of Research and Strategy firm Pencher & Berland, and now runs communications consultancy Message House. All of which is very relevant because in this week's episode, we're talking about the internal private polling that political parties carry out. Now, normally we hear about these polls when a party has briefed journalists that their private numbers show them doing better than the public polls show. So in the Scottish Independence campaign, Rupert Murdoch tweeted that the SNP's private polls showed that Yes was 8 points ahead. And similarly, there have been tales that Alex Salmond believed that he was going to win right up until the votes were counted, again, because of his private polls. This does make private polls look a bit one-dimensional, a bit shallow, and if they're just focused on these headline numbers, perhaps a bit redundant at a time when we have so many public polls. But I think there's more to them than that. And Matt, perhaps you could start us off by telling us what parties actually do use private polling for.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's a really interesting topic because most people, when they think about political opinion polls, focus on the voting intention question, what we might call the horse race. In other words, which party are you going to vote for? And that's the thing that gets reported in the media. And of course, sort of private political polls do have that question. But actually, that's the least interesting component of a private political poll. I mean, most parties use pollsters not to track voting intention over time. They too can read the papers and they can follow what's going on in the national trends. It's not to interpret what's going on, but actually to try and influence it. And so most private polling is much more focused on communications, on messaging, on policy ideas, on testing things that the campaign can then deploy to try and change the voters' attitudes rather than just to try and track them.
So how might they do that? What would an example be of how they would test an idea?
Well, obviously you've got a lot of tools methodologically available to you, and a lot of campaigns will use focus groups. And focus groups are, or certainly historically have been, a relatively simple to organise, relatively cost-effective and quick way of testing a policy or an advert or a potential message. And parties will use focus groups extensively. They don't obviously provide you with robust numbers on the basis of which you can make decisions, but they are a really useful sense check of what's going on in the voter's mind. And then parties will tend to use quantitative tools to understand how issues are playing out, potentially to test policy ideas or messages, so you can actually put texts into polls and get responses back from the public, and particularly also to try and segment the audiences so that you actually have an understanding not only of what you should be saying, but who you should be saying it to. And that component tends to be absent from most of the national public opinion polls that we see, which are very much focused on sort of generic UK nationally representative audiences.
And Kieran, from your perspective, how does that tally with the kind of things that you see in the polls that you're commissioned to do and that you're working on? Say if a newspaper commissions you for something, is that kind of thing similar? Is it different?
Well, I think the thing with political polls or just opinion polls in general in the media is that they're for a very different purpose to what political parties are doing polling for. Largely a media organisation, whether it's a broadcaster or a newspaper, is looking to create headlines, to create something that's interesting that they can use ultimately in content. Particularly in this 24-hour news cycle that we live in, there is a lot of content to fill, particularly for Sky News, BBC News, whatever it might be. So what they're trying to do is, I guess, two aspects to it, although there are many. One is to track what we call VI, voting intention, and to see which party's up, which party's down, perhaps which party leader might have a problem this week that they can use to really drive the agenda. But beyond that, to look at some of the issues. This week we've seen issues around the NHS, haven't we? And A&E waiting targets really struggling. And what we're going to see in the next week undoubtedly is lots of polling around the NHS to try and build on that story and to maybe to an extent understand it better and what people are really thinking. But ultimately, I think to produce column inches and to drive the agenda forward as we look towards the election.
I want to come back to this point that you mentioned, Matt, that as well as looking at different issues, one of the particular things that private polling tries to do is to understand different audiences and how they might respond to issues in different ways. Now, clearly, you can look at a national public poll and see, for example, people who voted Lib Dem in 2010 might think this, or older people might think that. But it sounds like you're suggesting something a bit more sophisticated than that.
Yeah, I think there's levels of sophistication. I mean, in the end, in a campaign context in the UK, polling is only as useful as you can do something with it. So, you know, you have to create segments which are not sort of intellectually interesting, but are actually applicable in the context of the tools that you've got in front of you. So, you know, being able to, if you were in the Conservative campaign or the Labour campaign now, being able to identify groups of people who may live in constituencies that are spread across the country but share similar characteristics, similar concerns, and people that you could therefore target with telephone calls or direct mail letters, or indeed potentially with knocks on the door and conversations, that's a useful way of understanding those audiences. So you can identify big groups, the group of people who were Conservative voters the last election who are potentially now thinking of voting UKIP is one clearly very interesting large group of voters that all the parties will be mulling over. But you're also going to want to base segments on attitudes, how people are feeling about issues and concerns, and those segments are ones that are a little bit more subtly identified but also key to try and win over swing voters.
And I would assume that this is quite a good way of actually responding to that agenda that we talked about in the media. So I think, for example, in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of polling about UKIP voters, haven't we, and what they think about things, to the point where you could even argue that the focus on UKIP as a party and their rise has almost driven the agenda towards issues about immigration and things like that, because it's just in the press so much. So presumably the political party can see that agenda being played out, whether you're Labour or the Conservatives, and then to respond to that, they're looking to do something arguably a bit more sophisticated to try and see what their messaging should be and how they actually sort of turn the tables, if you like.
No, I think that's right, and I think there's a lot of the campaigning activity. It's not always evident. It happens, you know, with leaflets, with direct mail shots, with conversations over the telephone, with the doorstep script that campaign teams will use. It's not always obvious, those conversations and the way that campaigns are deploying their messaging. But you mentioned the NHS. I mean, I think it's really interesting, not just that this debate is happening and we're obviously going to see all these polls because of the A&E crisis, but that it's pretty clearly a key part of Labour's strategy to get the NHS being talked about. And so as we begin the election year, it does feel like Labour's actually got hold of the political agenda in quite an interesting way. And that's clearly been part of their strategy, and I'm sure their polling will have helped them to understand that in the work that they've done last year in preparing for this moment. So clearly this is something that will be part of the weeks to come. But I would argue that the private polling that's been taking place within the party has helped them to get us to this point.
So taking that on then, from the point that you raised before about this only being so useful as you can do something with it, how does it then play out at a sort of at a doorstep at a local level? I think let's say for example that we find a target group that is, let's say, to people who voted Lib Dem in 2010 who are now undecided. Let's narrow it down some more and say women who voted Lib Dem in their 40s and 50s. How would any party go about then finding those people sort of from that point, once you've got the polling data, to actually going and talking to them?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it's partly why you need to see private political polling as having sort of it's a multifaceted, really. It does lots of different things. On one level, it serves the leadership of the party in helping them to understand what are the key messages, what are the key strategies, how we should be thinking about the campaign on a macro level. It also serves the, if it's done properly, the grassroots of the organisation, in that you can combine it with your voter identification returns, you can combine it with bought data sources that help you to map where social and economic groups live in postcode areas in the UK. And if you put those three or four different data sources together, it can help you to say this small postcode district in this constituency is going to be more likely to contain the key voters that we want to target. Now, if you want to get to the most sophisticated sort of big data campaigns that we've seen coming out of the US, you can then add in social media profiles and activity, and you can be very sophisticated to the extent to which they were buying ads on certain sites at certain times, knowing that their interested swing voters were more likely to be active at that point. As I say, in the UK, we have, I would say, in our parties, certainly in my experience, a pretty sophisticated intelligence polling teams that actually are doing brilliant work. We actually are limited in the campaign tools that we can deploy against that. But nevertheless, there are useful things that polling can do to help constituency parties target certain areas.
Is that principally down to money, then, why we're limited here? Or
partly money, partly the channels that we can use. I mean, you know, God forbid we open up the television to political advertising in the way that you see in the US, but nevertheless, that's one area where there is a much greater ability for political activity to influence voters in the US. Clearly, we're limited in the UK in the extent to which we can use broadcast media. But, you know, I think there are financial limitations too. And we're also talking about a smaller population and smaller constituencies, and so we're actually talking about relatively small groups of people that we're targeting as well. That makes it more difficult to build big campaigns as a result.
And I suppose that's part of the risk we've got now. There's so much data out there. To coin the phrase, you know, politics is moving towards a big data environment as well. I think in the UK, as I think you allude to, it has been in the past with the US. But because a lot of these tools, like marginal polling, in the numbers that we've seen so far, or the frequency we've seen so far, is actually quite a rare thing, quite a new thing. It presents a challenge on how much weight do you put on some of those numbers, given that there isn't actually that much marginal polling out there. So if I'm a political party, how much weight do I put on what I see from Lord Ashcroft or, to a lesser extent, the Comrades?
No, I think you're right. And I think it's really fair to say, I mean, this is an innovation that we haven't had, certainly didn't exist in 2005 when I was running the Labour campaign. You know, actually being able to get somebody putting into the public domain data which was showing you what was going on in marginal constituencies. I mean, it's a fantastic thing, let's say. How interesting is it? Well, from a sort of practical campaigner perspective inside a political campaign, not that interesting, actually. I mean, it gives you one data point, one sort of not very frequent data point about what might be going on in your constituency. But within the party, they will already have a large number of voter identification returns that will also give them useful information. So the marginal polling, I think, is a good development, but it's not, you know, in the end, political polling, internal political polling, is about trying to shape the campaign, not just trying to predict it. You know, a lot of what we see in the polls that are in the public domain are really for, you know, as political junkies who want to know, you know, what's going to happen on polling day. Clearly parties want to know that too, but they actually want to try and influence it. And what's more interesting from their perspective is what message should their leader say in the speech they're doing tomorrow.
So I want to go forward on that question of influencing the campaign and how that's done. I think it would be really, really useful to sort of think about the process of it. So let's say I'm a policy person in the party and I'm able to work with the polling teams and I'm focused on a particular policy area, let's say it's the NHS, and I've got a few ideas of what I want to do with it, what I think might work, and I've got the leaders buy-in, and we want to go forward and see what's going to work well with our target groups. What would I do next?
I think it's interesting how parties use polling to try and develop and shape the policy agenda. I think it's been really unfairly characterised in the past as if pollsters and polling are driving policy. It's certainly not been that in my experience. Polling is actually really useful as a sounding board. So it's actually about trying to put out ideas, some of which are in train and in existence, some of which are potential, and seeing how they will play out. And that doesn't mean that all of the bad ideas never get done. Quite often it's actually about how they're positioned, how they're explained, which voter groups they will appeal to and which voter groups they won't. You know, I always sort of like to characterise polling as really a map. It doesn't actually tell you where to go. It just gives you the landscape around which you're going to be walking. If you want to get to the top of the mountain, there's lots of different routes. We would always counsel, if you were sort of walking up a mountain, to take a map. And it would be perverse to think that we should try and run the country without having any interest in what the public would think about the policies that the government may put in place. So there's a balance here. testing ideas, exploring the way to position them, exploring the way to explain them is a vital part of getting effective policy delivered. But it is not the case, not a simple yes-no from the voter means that we will do it or we won't do it. It doesn't work like that.
I suppose the polling industry does face a challenge from the environment that it operates in. Thinking out loud, if you look at, there are politicians in the Labour Party who will actively criticise the Blair government in the past because it was policy by focus group. It was vacuous. There was nothing to it. That's the charge that they lay at the door, which as you said, is probably unfair. But that's a charge that they put out there, and therefore people that perhaps don't digest politics very regularly in the public start to get that message through that, oh, maybe actually there is something awry here. And then on the flip side, you've got people who have certain policy agendas, not necessarily politicians or parties, but particular sort of interest groups that will not necessarily actively mislead, but will really push their agenda with any data source that they can get, whether or not it's the most robust that might be out there. So you've got this combination of this drip, drip, drip of politicians who are disaffected and sort of political organisations who want to push their agenda that may give research a bad name and in misusing it create a misleading impression of the industry.
And I think we saw that in the aftermath of the Scottish referendum, where polling was once again put in the dock for both allegedly not being accurate in predicting, which obviously polling, as Lord Ashcroft reminds us, is not really intended to do. It's not necessarily an accurate predictor of what may happen in the future, given that campaigns may influence what people think. And also, somehow that because the YouGov Sunday Times poll suggested that Yes might win suddenly resulted in a big change in the campaign. I think you really have to, to counsel people about the way that polling works and its role. And I think a lot of people are misrepresenting what polling is for. I find it ironic that the very people who criticise the Blair government for, running a sort of government by focus group are quite often the same people who say that Blair never listened over Iraq. So you sort of can't have it both ways, really. I mean, either you're, being on the one hand criticised for listening too much and on the other, not enough. It is funny, though, that Blair's chief pollster through all of his time in government, Philip Gould, used to talk about polling as actually in a very real sense, a democratic service. If you're a politician who's running the country, it's very difficult to get a good sense of actually what people think. And the pollster, as long as they do their job properly and represent fairly what's going on out there, is playing a very important role in helping politicians to understand what the country feels and thinks. It does not mean the politician will do everything that the public want. And on occasion, they may do things that the public definitely don't want. But that's leadership for you. But it is important that they understand what the public think and they can be informed of that when they make their decisions.
And finally, our finding of the week. Matt, what have you brought along?
Well, I thought there was a very interesting chart in, I think it was Maury that produced it, which was about trust in different professions. And it showed, very high levels of trust in some professions that we may expect, like doctors, teachers, I think, came out very well, which was interesting. Over the last 20 or 30 years, it seems the clergy have declined in the level in which people will trust them, which is perhaps not surprising. Some of the scandals and issues they've had to deal with. Of course, though, at the bottom of the pile is politicians, and politicians are, once again, the group that people would least believe to be telling the truth. And I think my sort of interpretation of that is it's an obvious finding, I guess, but it is a useful reminder for the campaign teams as they begin their work in election year to make their wonderful promises and pledges that they offer us all not only sound enticing, but also sound believable. I've just recently been doing some work in a political campaign in another country, and it was really interesting testing that campaign's lead idea. It's a really powerful and appealing idea, but it actually tested quite badly. And it tested badly because nobody believed that they could actually do it. And so all of our politicians need not only to try and persuade us they've got something that we would want, they also have to try and persuade us that they can do it. And given the low standing of trust and believability that they have, that's sometimes quite a big challenge.
And I think it's a reminder that in many respects, the professionals that work in different public services are stakeholders for government. I mean, if you use a sort of corporate language. The teachers thing was particularly interesting when you look, when you consider that Michael Gove's recently been moved from Education Secretary. And one of the things that people I speak to in the Labour Party have been saying is that, you know, teachers will tell parents what's going on and in the education system, and you know, some will be more professional. The overwhelming majority, don't get me wrong, will be professional about it, but they will, parents will still pick up this drip, drip, drip of the morale amongst teachers being not very good. I think what this chart shows is actually that's who the public trust on these issues. So they're probably not going to sit there in parents' evening and say, don't vote Conservative. But at the same time, if there is this feeling that teachers aren't happy and my kid's at school and should I be worried about this, who are they going to trust? Clearly, on the evidence of this, they're going to trust the teachers rather than the politicians.
Well, I'm going to come in straight away with my finding of the week then, because it actually links in very closely, which is a separate YouGov poll on trust in the party's spending plans. And this had 31% trusting the Tories to tell the truth, just ahead of 27% trusting Labour, so a slight lead for the Tories. But really interestingly, on the next question, 49% think the government's claim to have halved the deficit is false, and only 33% think Labour has made £20 billion of unfunded spending commitments. So Labour are trailing on the basic principle of do you trust them to tell the truth? But actually, when you dig down to the detail, Labour are still ahead. So it's sort of, it's an odd thing where perhaps it just goes to show how long it takes to change the basic perception of are you trusted? Do you trust these people? And Labour might be on the detail when you sort of remind people what they're talking about. They might be doing a bit better, but it hasn't yet, or hasn't at all, really shifted the basic perceptions about the party.
Well, I mean, just a personal view on that, I think that it's not been a great few days for the Conservatives when you consider that there's a very easy rebuttal to some of their recent sort of critiques of the Labour Party, that why don't you just audit the figures then if you don't believe us? But my point was going to be there that what I don't think was the case with the YouGov poll, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is that Ed Balls or Ed Miliband were attached specifically to that policy. And
right.
what you can sometimes find is when people say, do you believe Ed Miliband's claim or do you believe Ed Balls' claim that you know, Labour's spending plans are great and well-funded and etc., you might see different numbers. And I guess the key thing to decipher there is to what extent are Ed Balls, Ed Miliband and whoever in the Labour Party priced in to the offer that they're making. We've talked about this before, haven't we? You know, is Ed Miliband's had some not great numbers in this parliament. Is that priced in to the current voting intention, or is that going to cause problems later on? We don't necessarily know that yet, but it is interesting. And particularly that's a challenge for pollsters when you're trying to understand how popular or credible different policies are. You know, are they linking them to the people that are actually going to be there to deliver them? My finding of the week is less a finding, but more of a tool that I've come across, which is the New Statesman sort of election prediction model that they put in the May 2015 website. And those who follow me on Twitter will, and I hope there's a few people listening to this podcast that do, will know that I've been raving about this tool for the last couple of days. It's really great. What it allows you to do in a very accessible way is to plug in different sort of vote share figures nationally at a GB level, in Scotland as well. And it also factors in some of the Lord Ashcroft marginal polling as well. And you can find more information on the website in terms of the nuts and bolts of how they do it. But it's a really useful tool to get under the skin of how this election is going to be won and lost. Ultimately, yes, there's lots of individual marginal contests that you're too many to count, really, in terms of to really get your head round. But actually, what this website allows you to do is to look at, OK, if the SNP do X in Scotland, if the overarching vote share is Y in Great Britain, then you'll probably spit out something like, you know, Zed. And I think what's going to be interesting, there's a lot of this at the moment around, there's a great demand with all this data to try and project what might happen at the election. So it's going to be really interesting to see to what extent these different tools are actually successful at that, particularly as I'm sure the closer we get to an election, the speed of campaigning and the speed of change in the sort of VI gathers pace.
That was Polling Matters. Thanks very much for listening. Our music is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed on Creative Commons. Join us next week.